Welcome to SB Nation Radio here on 106.7 The Fan with Mike Prada. I'm Scott Jackson. Good to be with you. And if you haven't already done it, follow us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio. And, of course, like us on Facebook. As we always like to say, Mike, even if you don't like us.
Yep, that's right.
You can superficially like us on Facebook.
That's correct.
It has been kind of a crazy week in D.C. The Capitals, of course, coming back from the All-Star break. You had D'Angelo Hall winning a Pro Bowl game as a defensive player on one of the worst defenses in the NFL in a game where, you know, almost 100 points were scored combined. And then at the end of the week, the owner of the Washington Redskins is suing a paper that not many people probably know about.
That's right. And don't forget, the Super Bowl is this weekend.
Oh, yeah. And then there's a little Super Bowl thing going on this weekend. And, of course, Maryland played Duke. So,
and Gilbert Arenas is coming back on, you know, over the weekend as well. So.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on here, and a lot to get to here on SB Nation Radio. We're going to talk to the editor of the Washington City Paper, Mike Schaefer, here in a little bit, get his perspective on the Dan Snyder lawsuit against his publication in a bit. But let's start with what was a tough week for Maryland in the sense they had a big opportunity to kind of help their bubble position and get blown out in the end by Duke at home in a game where really they had just no perimeter game, not enough of a perimeter game whatsoever. And, you know, give Duke credit. They kind of brought, you know, took Jordan Williams out of the game early, and it was not the easiest of nights for him.
I think it's a very disappointing loss because there's Maryland needed that game so badly for their NCAA tournament resume. They had come up so close in a lot of games. And so for them to not, I just thought they weren't ready at the jump. I think that Duke kind of jumped on them in the first half. And in the second half, they tried to come back, but there was just too big a hole. And you have to wonder, I mean, in that environment against that opponent, you know, with this important of a game, why are you coming out as flat as you are? And I think that that's just tremendously disappointing. And for me especially, because I really did believe in this team. And I guess they could still turn it around, but I think this team is better than their record. They've been two games, I think, where they come up really flat. Last night in the Virginia Tech game, and there have been a couple games where if they hit their free throws, they would have beaten a good team. And suddenly with that, you're at 14-8.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, too, this, you know, and this is just the ongoing pattern since this team won the national championship, save a couple seasons, pretty much this is what Maryland does. They start off the season kind of slow. They have a crappy loss at a conference or something that makes everybody mad, and then they're trying to fight their way back. I mean, this has just been an ongoing pattern. And I think that's a bigger question with the program when you look at what's going on. Why does this continuing pattern happen over and over again where they're fighting for their lives, you know, this time of year?
Well, I think it's once the years after the national title game, Maryland got these really good recruiting classes as far as rankings-wise. I think their first year they had a couple McDonald's All-Americans the national championship, and those guys were kind of disappointing. I think they got a little caught up in the rankings game and not the what fits for Maryland game, and then since then they've kind of overreacted the other way where they're so concerned about how does a guy fit in with Maryland, you know, trying to recapture the magic of the 2002 team that was so overlooked by so many high school evaluators. They're going a little bit too much in the other direction. And, you know, you look at a certain point when all this homegrown talent goes to other schools in this area, it catches up to you. You know, you might get a Grievous Vasquez one year who really overachieves. You might get a Jordan Williams that kind of comes out a diamond in the rough type. But after a while, I mean, what you end up getting is what they have this year, which is a bunch of guards who can't shoot.
Yes.
And that's it's unfortunate because I think the rest of the team, there's a lot to like about this team, I think. I think that they have some guys that can do a lot of good things. They can't shoot and they can't hit free throws. And in this college game, if you can't shoot, your post threat is going to be double and triple teamed, and he's going to be taken out of a lot of games.
Well, yeah, and that's a tough part because, you know, who knows if Jordan Williams is going to stick around for another year, and maybe the CBA issues with the NBA will have some impact on what his decision is, although we thought the same thing about the NFL, that everybody and their mother left anyway outside of Andrew Luck. But, yeah, it is interesting, and it's disappointing because this is such a down year on the ACC. It really seems like a year you could take advantage of it with a star player. Like, Jordan Williams is one of the best players in this conference. There's no doubt. I think Nolan Smith will be the conference player of the year, you know, and deservedly so. so. I think you could put Jordan Williams, you know, right up there, though, with the best. He'll probably be a first-team All-ACC selection. And he's probably the second-best big man in college basketball right now behind Sullinger of Ohio State. But you just, as you point out, you don't have that outside threat, so it's really easy now to defend him. And Duke has a lot of bodies they can roll at you. And, you know, the Plumlee brothers, you know, aren't great, you know, overall as good as they were advertised to be. You know, Ryan Kelly certainly has got a lot of work to do in his game. But, you know, Singler's very good. I mean, they just have a lot of different options to throw at you, that forward position, and you know, I think, you know, that's why they could match up with Maryland, and they don't have to worry about the guard so much, you know, because again, they're not making the outside shots. So Maryland's got, you know, a month here to really, they're going to have to go on a run. I mean, they've got these games against Wake and Longwood, which should be wins at home. You got at BC, at Virginia Tech, which are all big, and they pretty much need them all at this point to firm up that bubble position. And I don't think you can just say, hey, if we go 500 in our conference, that's good enough anymore.
No.
I think you need to do a little bit more than that.
I agree. The one thing that really concerns me is not that these guys can't shoot necessarily, but that they don't shoot,
right.
I don't think. They only had 9 three-point attempts against Duke. Duke had 23. Now, Duke is a very good three-point shooting team,
sure.
But as you and I both know, sometimes you got to just let it fly when you're open, even if you're not the most confident shooter. I look at a guy like Adrian Bowie, and he's shooting, like, I want to say 35, 36, 37% from three in that area, maybe a little lower. That's not great, but you need to still be shooting a little bit at, you know, with that percentage to kind of keep the defense honest. And if you're more confident in your shot, you'll shoot better. You know, Sean Mosley's another guy who just, he had 5 shot attempts in 18 minutes, and that's just not going to get it done. You know, and then you come with Cliff Tucker off the bench, and he just fires away. It's kind of like there's no real balance. They don't make quick decisions with the ball, and, you know, that's going to cost you. Now, they are a young team. You know, let's be honest. They lost 3 big-time players last year
in
their starting 5. You know, so I think that they filled the voids with guys who played last year, but maybe guys who didn't play in this kind of role. And the other thing is that Jordan Williams wasn't like this last year, and I think a lot of the same players not used to kind of the conditions that are changing.
I mean, they do have 3 seniors, though. I mean, at the same time, too, though, with, you know, the other parts are young. But, I mean, you got Tucker and Bowie and Gregory are seniors. So that should translate to something. Usually that's a good formula in the ACC. But nevertheless, Maryland in a tough bubble position right now, whereas, you know, Georgetown, who a few weeks ago we were asking, well, what's going on with Austin Freeman? What's going on with the Hoyas? Is this the beginning of the end for them? Is this, like, you know, is this going to be one of the seasons where they collapse? And then people are wondering about JT3. Well, all of a sudden, you know, they've started ripping through the Big East again and are on very solid ground. Their RPI is great. I mean, they're not going to have any issues coming down the stretch here. But the Big East is so tough, you really can't take a breath and say, wow, you know, here we are, we've made it. Because as soon as you do, you know, you're in UConn's spot where you lose 2 games at home.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive what Georgetown has been doing. I think they're playing better defense. You know, that's a big – they had some real defensive issues during their losing streak.
Yeah.
Now, they also had some offensive issues, but
sure did,
they couldn't get stops when they needed to, and I think they've really stepped that up. They're big men. They made a lineup change. They brought in Nate Lubick, and they sat Hollis Thompson, which I think has been a real help to them. Get a guy who kind of moves the ball and does a lot of the little things, and then play Thompson off the bench. That was a good move. And Austin Freeman's shooting better. I mean, that explains
right
a lot.
There. Yeah.
You know, but I think the switch in the starting lineup was a really good move for them. I think it really balanced everything. You got guys can now focus on what they do best with the one guy who kind of fills in the blanks. And I think that's really helped them kind of stabilize and kind of get what they need from their starters, you know, those little things that you need to win.
Yeah, they still got some tough games in front of them on the road, especially they got to go to Syracuse and to UConn still. But the home schedule is very manageable for them. The harder part of the home schedule is out of the way. So I think Georgetown will finish strong. And again, already at 17-5, I think they should be just fine. You know, really now it's all about, hey, keep playing and build your ranking up. As we know, there's a big difference between being a 2 or 3 versus a 4 or 5 when it comes to the teams you're going to play in the NCAA tournament. It's SB Nation Radio. Scott Jackson and Mike Prada here on 106.7 The Fan with you. And coming up in a bit, we're going to talk to Mike Schaefer, the editor of the Washington City paper, his thoughts on the lawsuit against his paper, and we'll talk about that real quick before we jump into that here a little bit before Mike. George Mason also got a real opportunity to get themselves back in the big dance as well.
And they have a really good RPI, too. I think they're a top 30 RPI team right now. And that's the CAA is not traditionally a multi-bid league. Some years they have been, some years they haven't. But if I think that this year might be a good opportunity for them to not only get in for the CAA tournament, they could make it as an at-large. and they've won a lot of games in their row. They just beat Hofstra. They beat James Madison at James Madison a couple weeks ago. They have VCU coming up, which is a big game. But they're playing really, really good ball right now. And I think that it's an experienced team. It's the kind of mid-major team that you know top team is going to want to face come March.
Well, remember, they were not large the year they made their run. They did not win the CAA. So, yeah, I think there will be multiple teams this year in the Colonial as well. I mean, Old Dominion, VCU, and George Mason all in the mix there. You know, and Hofstra is probably too much damage outside of the conference for them, and Madison as well. They blew their opportunities. But those three teams, probably two of them could get in, maybe three, I guess.
Well, if one of the lower teams wins the conference tournament, which doesn't happen as much in the CAA as in other mid-major leagues.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how it finishes out. But, yeah, there's no doubt Mason's put themselves in a real nice spot going into the weekend at 18-5 and 10-2 in the conference overall. So it could be, at least a couple teams from the area in the tournament. Of course, American, depending on how they finish up in the Patriot League, if they could pull off a win in that tournament, could join them as well in the NCAAs. All right, a couple minutes here to talk about before we get with Mike Schaefer from the City Paper. The lawsuit, Dan Snyder lawsuit, what was your initial reaction when you saw that this was coming down, and what has been the reaction for the fans that have jumped in on the site and talked about it?
Well, I think it's pretty unanimously people are wondering what the Redskins are doing. Mm-hmm. The City Paper has a 72,000 person circulation, and that's not all that significant, you know. And sure. Like the site, the story gets linked in a lot of places, like I get that. But it's not a very this story was like a cool story for maybe a day or two, the Dave McKenna story. I mean,
yes.
And then it kind of just faded away, and now this has brought it right back, you know, into the forefront. And they're asking for $2 million in damages. And if you're Dan Snyder, what is that really going to do?
Well, and they say they're going to give it to charity, which is fine. I think there's a point to be made here. He feels like, you know, is enough with the cheap shots. And obviously, some of this is involved, I guess, it kind of depends on the interpretation. The fact errors is the interesting part. The things they say are fact errors. Others will contend or not. And then the thing, was it a personal attack on his wife, has come up. It's kind of hard to read that into what was written there.
Yeah, I don't
buy
that one.
Yeah.
Someone did some research. I think Dan Steinberg did some research that the article didn't mention. The claim is that Dan Snyder's wife's, you know, the fact that she's a spokesperson for breast cancer was kind of mocked in the story. But if you look at the story, her breast cancer isn't mentioned once.
No. And by the way, I mean, actually, as terrible as that would be if somebody mocked it, that wouldn't actually be a situation for libel.
No.
I mean, and that would be wrong. It would be tacky. But even if they did that, which I'm not sure they did, then that wouldn't even be a situation where you could go after for libel. So a lot of things that are interesting. I'd love to talk to a lawyer about this at some point, which I plan to do, and find out more. But it just seems like a very tough. Maybe it's just a point to be made. Maybe they figure, you know what, they're going to lawyer up and maybe bleed the City Paper out of some dollars. I don't know. Even if they don't win the case, maybe it's just worth it to do it, to maybe scare off anybody else on the .com world. But it seems like after a year where you went out of your way to be a little bit more transparent, a little bit more media-friendly, fan-friendly, that this may be kind of a step backwards.
Absolutely.
In that process. And I think that's what a lot of people are kind of scratching their head about right now.
I think the Redskins hoped that the City Paper would fold and just give it up. I don't think they actually wanted this lawsuit.
Well, I'm surprised Dan Snyder just didn't buy the City Paper, to be honest with you. That was really my next thought. So it's not a PR situation that appears to be working very well for the Redskins as hard as they try. And I've heard Tony Wiley and Donovan on the station, obviously, this week with LeVar and Dukes talking about it. And I still, you know, although I'm sympathetic to probably the frustration of some of the things that Dan Snyder goes through, even when he's trying to do the right thing, at the same time, you know, I don't think this helps the situation. Because I had completely, you know, God's honest truth, forgotten about the whole story.
Yeah. I mean, Donovan totally said, like, the story had a bigger reach than the circulation, and that's why they have to do this. But in the process, I mean, we'll talk to Michael about this, but what the City Paper said is that the site shut down because there's so many people clicking on the McKenna story after the suit was filed.
Yeah.
Which is, well, yeah, that's so counterproductive.
Yeah. Well, let's get to Mike coming up. Mike Schaefer is going to be with us. We'll check in with Joel Thurman later on as well from the Super Bowl. Get into this Gilbert Arenas interview that he had with Chris Miller from Comcast Sportsnet later in the show. It's SB Nation Radio. Scott Jackson, Mike Pradio here on 106.7 The Fan.